ready to have a meeting? My name is Alex, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NAVA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight, and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is Ashley J., coming to us from Gainesville, and I'm very excited to hear what she has to say.
Thank you. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Thank you guys so much for being here. Y'all could definitely have a meeting without me, but I could not have one without you all. So thank you for that. I'm just going to take a moment of silence to myself, and then I'll open up. My name is Ashley, and I'm an alcoholic. Somebody get tissues, y'all, because I'm going to be laughing in one sentence and crying in the next. So,
no, that's for real. I need someone to bring some tissues.
So, my sobriety date is November 15th, 2014. I'm blessed and grateful. So grateful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I have 9 years of sobriety. I'm working on my 10th year of sobriety now. God willing, one day at a time, y'all, right? So, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So what it was like. Thank you so much. I'm going to just keep the whole packet here. Thank you for ever getting this to me. Thank you so much. Let me just say, before I get started, y'all, thank you so much, Tim, for asking me to be of service in this way. I've been told since the beginning and earliest of my sobriety, whenever you are asked to be of service, you say yes. God will work out the details, but you say yes, and you see that when you show up for your sobriety. Because someone did that for me, right? They did that for me, and they showed up, and they told their stories, and that's how I found a sponsor. And I'd like to thank Bill and Bob, Lois and Ann, without which our program would not exist, and my sponsor, my beautiful sponsor, for being here. I wanted to just come out here by myself and just do my own thing, and I wrote on my gratitude list, which I do every day, and I had that I was speaking, and she's like, where are you speaking? Because I'm picking you up, and we're going to go out here tonight. And I was like, okay. So God had other plans with that, so I just wanted to stay out there. So what it was like. So I was born in Jacksonville, Florida, and I had a very interesting upbringing. My mom is beautiful Christian lady, very codependent by nature, though, just stems from a lot of abandonment issues. And my father loved me very much, so don't ever forget that through my story. But he had just grown up in a different way, and his occupation was selling drugs, and that's just what he did. And he was a full-blown alcoholic. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing with his program. But my parents' relationship is very tumultuous at a very early stage of their relationship. As a result of that, I saw a lot of physical abuse and violence happening around me. It was normalized as I was growing up. But my mom, you know, really grew into herself, and when I was 4 years old, she ended up divorcing my dad, which was, you know, all the better for everyone, but I still had every other weekend at my dad's house, so I experienced a lot. I saw a lot of interesting, unsavory things growing up. You know, I had my mom, who just really opened my eyes to, actually, whatever it is that you want to do, you do it, and I'll make a way. You know, my mom was a single mom, and she really got very little for child support. She put herself back to school, worked 2 jobs, and somehow I always felt like she was home. When the hell did you all was in? Somehow she was just always there. And you know, she got me into different things, dance and cheerleading and gymnastics and acting and modeling is something I got into at a very early age, and something I took to. I loved to do that so much. And she was like, okay, so we'll do this. So that's what I did as a child. I would go to different auditions and do like commercials and things like that. Florida is actually really big in that way. And then every other weekend, I would go to my dad's house, and I would see a totally different lifestyle. You know, I would see people that were buying drugs and a lot of physical abuse still happening. He remarried, and so that was just a continued part of my childhood. You know, this very healthy and wonderful way with my mom, but very codependent, and then with my dad, I just saw this way of life. And I just thought it was normal. You know, I just thought everybody had their stuff. You know, I was so little, and I was just like, I didn't have anything to compare it to. It was all relative. It was my experience. I didn't really know anything was odd with seeing physical abuse and drugs being sold in front of you. It was what it was. So, needless to say, when I turned 9, my career was picking up a lot more. I was working in Orlando a lot. My mom kept driving back and forth to Orlando, losing job after job to get me to audition and then call back and then a job. And, you know, so it was just, she kept losing jobs. So she asked me, Ashley, would you like to move to Orlando? Which is a big thing to ask a 9-year-old child. What a decision to put in a child's hands. But I was like, yeah, you know, I want to do this. I want to do this full time. So we moved to Orlando with my brother and my mom. And, you know, we henceforth with my career and doing different shows and things like that. And Florida lost all of its tax incentives. So all the films and all the things that were happening in Florida ended up drying out. They all actually moved here. So my career essentially halted at that time. So my entire identity, or what I thought was my identity, which was being an actress, was gone. I no longer had anything that made me me anymore. And I felt lost, and I felt empty, and I felt like I did not fit in. I was really confused as to who I was. And I met a group of girls, and they had it. They had what I was looking for. They had the solution, what I had been looking for. And they introduced me to her, and her name is Alcohol. And she promised me everything. She promised me fun and conviviality, as the book describes, joy and excitement and love and friendship. And she was my son. And she took away all the pain of what I had thought that I lost. I found it all in a bottle. And along with her came other friends. They were a little darker, a little weirder, those draw friends. They were interesting characters, very Avery. But I loved it all. I'm a real alcoholic, y'all. I'll use anything alcoholic, you know what I'm saying? Anything. Everything. So I did all the things. And as a result of that, I started to just wild out. I started partying. I thought it was partying. I thought it was just like having a good time. Just having a good time. I used to say, like, my mantra was like, I just want to party. It's gonna bite me. And that was like my mantra for like 20 years. Bad. But I got into tons of trouble. It was like every time I would drink from a very early age, I would black out. Every time. And as a result of that, I've woken up next to men as a child. Many times. Undressed. Or confused, not knowing where I was, bruised and bloody many times. That's the way that I woke up. And because that would happen, I was so ashamed, and I felt like I'd placed myself in those positions. But for some reason, this magic elixir, alcohol, took that away. I could make what happened to me feel like I wanted it to happen. I could make it feel like it was okay. Or I could just make it feel like it didn't happen at all, depending on the circumstance and how ugly the guy was. Yeah. So I kept drinking, and I kept using other substances, and my life just kept getting more and more dark and unmanageable. and I got sicker and sicker. And when I turned 17, I went to the doctor, and I showed spots on my liver. I was entering liver failure at 17 years old, which just tells you the type of alcoholic I am. Because, you know, another fellowship says it perfectly, and I love it. One is too many, and a thousand is never enough, right? Because I have a mental obsession in my mind. I have a mental obsession. And when I act on that obsession, I pick up a drink or a drug or anything, what happens to me is called the phenomenon of craving. And I cannot stop drinking or drugging. Something inside of me wakes up. Ashley, who you see in front of you, goes to sleep. But something else wakes up. Something not from this world. From a lower level, something truly evil. That wants to kill me. Truly, that's what it wants to do. It wants me dead. This is what my life was. Over and over, around and around, shame, guilt, remorse, pain, anger, wanting to die, wanting to drink myself to death, blackouts, trying to kill other people. That happened multiple times. I tried to kill a person with my car, unsuccessfully, thank God, because I would be in jail today. I tried to kill myself multiple times. I've been into 5 mental institutions for being vapor-acted, because as you can tell, I'm a really frothy alcoholic. I keep it super frothy, you know. I have a good time until I'm crazy in a straitjacket and mumbling to myself in a corner. Good luck, y'all. And that's just what my life looked like. Over and over, around and around the same merry-go-round. And the thing about it is, I didn't know that there was another alternative. I didn't. I just, at this stage in my life, I just thought my alcoholic life was the only normal one. And the only way that I could not feel restless, irritable, and discontent was to drink. That's the only time I found that sense of ease and comfort. It was by taking drinks or using drugs. Drinks I saw other people having with impunity, without punishment. That's just what I saw, and I thought that I could do that. But I'm a real alcoholic, and it talks about that in the book, what a real alcoholic is. I'm a real one. So this continues on. I ended up having a child when I was 21, which, I mean, obviously that was like a couple days ago. So I have a child, and I felt like this is amazing. This is going to be the thing that saved my life. You know, God blessed me with this child, and I'm going to be a good mom, and I'm going to live for this baby boy, you know, and all the love I was looking for had now been made manifest in this human form of a child. But again, I'm a real alcoholic, and my son could not stop me from being that way. So as much as I loved him, I could not stop drinking, and I could not stop eating. And when he turned 2, custody was taken from me by the Department of Children and Families. My son was taken, and custody was remanded to my mother. Later on, I found out that my mom was the one who called the Department of Children and Families on me, and I hated her for doing that to me. How dare you do that to me? But looking back, after some time in the room, and after the steps, thank God for me. Thank God, because that was one of the stars to me deciding to do something different. Not the stuff, yes, because I'm still a real alcoholic, so it doesn't matter what comes in or what comes out of my life. I am a real alcoholic. I'm going to drink. I'm going to use. The fact that we are sitting in this room, y'all, sober right now, goes against everything that we are wired to do. It is a miracle we're here, y'all. It is a miracle, just the fact that we are here right now. So I continue drinking. I lost everything that I wanted to live for anyway. Now I'm going to die. One day I woke up and I said, are you done? Something in me said, are you done yet? Are you done yet? Look at your life. You have completely destroyed your life, like this joyful and
loving child to this angry, pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. That's all I lived in. I didn't know joy anymore. I knew shame. I knew regret. I knew guilt. Like, all the bedevilments, that's all I knew in my life. And finally, something reminded me of who I was. Don't you remember? You're my child. I died for you so you could live. You are mine. Remember who you are. Simba. Remember who you are. So I asked God, what do I do? I need you. What do I do now? And I felt this prompting in my heart. God doesn't speak to me in an audible way all the time. This I felt in my spirit. I had tried AA when I was 15, because I started showing signs of alcoholism the moment I picked up my first drink. So I remembered AA, and something said, call intergroup. I didn't ever hear the word intergroup before. Call intergroup. Called intergroup, found out that there was a meeting at noon that day. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning, y'all. I'm hungover, it's all get out. But I called, and I found out where the meeting was, and I went, and I picked up my last white chip. And a couple weeks later, going to meetings every day, I heard a woman share her story, and she sounded just like me. She didn't have the same story, but I heard the language of the heart open up in her, and I knew that this was someone I needed to have in my life. So I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said, okay, yeah, are you willing to do the work? I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever that means. So we meet together, and she asked me to sit down, and she asked me to write a list. She tells me to write a list of 10 ways I was powerless over alcohol. My life had become unmanageable, so I did that. And this is the first time with pen and paper I saw the unmanageability and the powerlessness of alcohol in my life. I wrote that down. She asked me 3 simple questions. She said, Ashley, do you believe you're an alcoholic? I said, yeah. She said, are you willing to do something about it? I said, yes. She said, what are you willing to do? I said, anything. And she said, that's a perfect first step. Let's move on. So step 2, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I grew up in a Christian home. I've always believed in God. But I had to come to the realization that I had been insane. And after I had done my list of my unmanageability, I could see the insanity there. So I realized it was insane. I was ready to have that power restore me to sanity. So I did come to believe that a power could restore me to sanity. And just the fact that I was able to sit down, draw sober breath, meant that it was already happening, y'all. So step 3, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him. I remember being at my family's restaurant, near the restaurant, and my sponsor told me to go outside with her and get on my knees and say the 3rd step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee. To build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do your will. Take away my difficulties. That victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with your power, your love, and your way of life. May I do your will always in Jesus' name. And I said that prayer from an open heart and an open place, and I felt something shift and come alive inside of me. Step 4 in the book, it talks about right after we do the 3rd step prayer, it says next, we launch out on a vigorous course of action. So step 3 is not only saying that I'm going to give you my will and my life, it says I'm going to take some action. That action being step 4, which is then making a fearless and moral inventory of myself. Something that a lot of people, when I came into AA and I was really young, would say, oh girl, that's the hardest step you're ever going to do. You're not going to do that then. It's step 4, get them out of time. This time, no, honey. There was no thing that was going to keep me away from the presence of God, including writing down stuff. I almost cursed. Writing down things I knew I already had done. What was to be afraid of? These are things I knew I did. The disease, y'all, is a liar. The devil is a lie. Because that is the thing that my disease knew would be the ticket to freedom. So I wrote those things down, and then step 5, admitted to God to myself and to another human being the exact nature of my wrongs. Y'all, by this time, I have heard my sponsor's story so many times. I've gone to meetings with her. She has told me her experience, her strength, and her hope. So now, after writing these things, I trust this woman. If I do not trust the person I'm working with, y'all, we can go to a priest. We can go to a closed-mouth friend, is what the book says. Anyone. But I do suggest being sponsored by someone that you trust. So I sat down with this woman. She came over to my apartment, which by now, y'all, I have my own place. But, okay, like, things are already, like, the promises are coming true already. She comes to my place, and I sit on the couch, and we do this fifth step for 8 hours, y'all. I mean, like, we peed, and we, like, ate and stuff like that, too, you know? Like, we didn't just... So, we do this thing, and then she leaves me. She says, you've done the work, baby girl, good job. And then the book tells me, I sit down, and I thank God from the bottom of my heart that I know him better. And I thank God for that. And I ask, have I omitted anything? Have I left off anything? The book tells me to ask that. Did you leave off anything? So I ask that. And then I sat quiet for an hour, tells me to take this book off the shelf and read the first 5 proposals, meaning the first 5 steps. So I read the first 5 steps, and then it tells me to be quiet for an hour. And I sat there in silence for an hour. And I felt the presence of my God come before me, above me, and I began to weep an old, old, old cry from every time I didn't listen to that inner child, and that I left her alone to be touched and to be hurt, and that I fell asleep and I let people do things to her. And I wept for that mom who lost her son. And I wept for that little girl who watched her dad beat her mom. I wept for her. And I felt the Spirit taking every one of those things root and branch from me. And when I would try to stop, I didn't want to cry anymore. It would continue pulling at the deepest recesses of my heart until I would cry and cry and cry. And when that hour was done, I stood at last with the Spirit of the universe. I could look the world in the eye. I could be alone at perfect peace and ease. My fears fell from me. I was free for the first time in my whole life. I was free. And there was nothing that could lock me away again, because I could see who I was, and that God saw everything that I was ever going to do, and he loved me anyway. He loved me knowing what I would be and knowing what I would do, and he loved me anyway and said, I don't care about any of that. I love you. Come to me, child. Step 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character after seeing in my fifth step my sponsor was writing down all of my character defects, and these were the things that drove me to make these choices. I'll call them that. I was entirely ready for God to have those. Step 7, humbly asked him to remove my shortcomings. I say the 7-step prayer along with my 3rd-step prayer every morning on my knees so that I can give him once again my character defects, because it's so quick for me to pick those things back up again. Step 8, made a list of all persons I had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. In my 4th step, surprise, I didn't realize this, all the people I was mad at were then going to become the people that I was going to have to make amends to. That surprised me. I was a little mad, a little upset about that, but my sponsor had me write a now and later list. Now and later. We'll get to the laters later. We'll pray over those, but we're going to do these ones now. The point in step 8 is became willing to make amends to them all. That's the whole point.
I have to be willing to make amends for it. If I'm not willing, then I got to sit on step 8 for a little while. I got to keep on praying for those resentments until I can become willing to make amends for them all. Because I'm so sorry, but I'm not going to allow something that someone else has done to me keep me from the sunlight of the Spirit. And one resentment that was very difficult for me to let go of, excuse me, was when I was 16, I was raped by a guy in high school. My boyfriend's best friend raped me. And I had to put him on my resentment list. And having to become willing to make amends to that, well, I don't victim shame here, and neither did my sponsor. But what I ended up having to put was myself and forgive myself for allowing what someone else did to me to dictate the woman I was going to be for the next 15 years. You don't get that power over me anymore. And I was able to let that go and continue henceforth. Step 9 made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except to intervene so would injure them or others. Like step 5, step 9 is one of the most powerful steps that ever happened. That's why we read the 9-step promises all the time. That's exactly why. And if we are painstaking, if this is the great qualifier, if I'm not painstaking, I will not be amazed before I am halfway through. I will regret the past and wish to shut the door on it. If I don't take that step, truly and honestly, everything in those promises, if you do the reverse of them, will come true. They will become opposite promises in your life. But those promises come true when I do the work. That's when they come true. They don't come true when I come to meetings and think I can get this by osmosis. They come true when I work the steps. That's how it works. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. This is one of my favorites.
That's my sponsor knows. We love some inventory.
Woo! Do we ever? Every night, we do a cute little nightly inventory. Because I'll tell you the truth. About 5 years sober, I wanted to die. And I didn't understand why. I was sober. Things were happening. Things were good in my life. But I'm a real alcoholic. That means if I get sober, that doesn't stop my disease. I still have the disease which centers in the mind. I still have the disease of the mind. So I have to do work. I get to do work every day so I can stay free. So I write an inventory every night. And my sponsors here can vouch for that, y'all. Step 11, thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I have an entire prayer closet that I have dedicated to the Lord and my time with Him every single day. I love God with every part of my being. If someone looks at me and does not see God, then there is something I'm doing wrong in my program. I look different, I talk different, and I'm supposed to, because I'm a child of God. I'm not supposed to look like this world. I am in this world, I'm not of it. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the, which is singular, it is the result of these steps, these is plural. I got to work all of them so I can get a spiritual experience. We try to carry this message to alcoholics and the practice these principles in all our affairs. I've had that spiritual experience. I have them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a one and done thing here, y'all. I have them all the time. Every single day that I wake up and I have eyes to truly see what God has done in my life, I have a spiritual experience right there. As a result of working steps and full custody of my son back within 6 months of my sobriety, my career has come back, which is why I'm here in Georgia. I'm able to work and do what I love, and I don't need for anything. I met my husband in sobriety. We had a daughter. We got married. Obviously, he's my husband, and we have such a beautiful life. Tell you what, last year, God was pulling us to Georgia, and I was like, okay, Lord, like, yeah, it's so great, like, I'm going to go, and like, you know, I'm being, banging it out, like, doing my thing, you know, television, doing my thing, and I get here, and 2 weeks later, or a month later, my union goes on strike. I don't know if y'all heard about the SAG union going on strike. It's like, a month after I get here, and I'm like, what am I even doing here? Like, you told me.
Like, hello, don't you, what's the plan now? And God was just like, chop wood, carry water. Keep doing the next right thing. Because God knew what would be more important for me. And that wasn't blowing up on television. That was continuing to enlarge my spiritual life. So I found a home group right up the road from my house, and I met this beautiful woman, Tracy, which, y'all, we could have walked out right after how it worked. Like, she killed that. We could have dropped the mic and left. I met this beautiful woman, and we've been able to trudge the road of happy destiny together, and it has been the most beautiful experience of my life. I'll tell you a quick story. I joined this home group, and the first, I think the second time I went there, I sat alone at a cubicle. She was out of town. I sat alone at a table. I had no friends, no one near me, and I felt so alone. Not only that, I was the only black woman in the world, real alone. I was the only black woman in the room, so I never had felt my blackness in a way like that before. And I called my husband, and I told him about it, and I just said, I don't really understand why I'm here. And he just said, keep coming back, baby girl. More will be revealed. And about a couple months later, I started sponsoring like crazy. I don't know, for some reason, people liked what I got to say. Thank God.
Yes.
And people started asking me to sponsor, and I got a sponsor. And with my sponsor comes y'all, like a grand sponsor, a great-grand sponsor, like all these. I've got so many sisters, and one day I'm sitting at that same table in the same seat, and to my left is my sponsor. And to my right are four of my sponsors at that same table. I just kept coming past y'all. I didn't know why, but I knew what I needed for my sobriety. And God has continued to make a way and to draw a line with a crooked pencil. You know, the doctor's opinion talks about how men and women drink essentially because they like the effects produced by alcohol. I go to AA because I like the effects produced by Alcoholics Anonymous, so I keep coming back. Thanks.
Thank you, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
I used hate my pain. For the feeling like a winter rain, I'd run away, hiding the hurt with a drink or an angry word, until the day could not deny the healing calling from deep inside. It was a love that was here to mend. A broken heart could be my friend. On the other side, I will cry. Above a mountain, here to climb. As I grow, I stumble and I fall. I am grateful for it all. On the side, there is peace beneath the pain. A tender tear that I can't explain. Washing away the fearful moon, bearing a light for my life to bloom. On the other side, I will rise. Above the mountain, I'm aligned. As I grow, I stumble and I fall. I am grateful for it all. On the other side, I live my dream, finding joy, bringing me. As I grow, I stumble and I fall, but I am grateful.